Hey, there he is.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, Jimmy. How you doing, brother?
I'm real good. You know, according to some of my listeners, this is the only interview I should have ever done or will ever need to do.
Oh, my gracious, buddy. I appreciate that. I really do. I really do, man. I will tell you, my Zoom is a bit spotty, brother. So if I fall out, I'll jump back on with you.
Okay. Not a problem. I appreciate you doing this.
Oh, I'm thrilled to death, brother. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is my fourth season, and every season I ask listeners, you know, who they want, you know, would like for me to have on the show, and your name comes up consistently. So you've got a lot of fans out there.
Oh, brother, that's really cool to hear, pal. I appreciate that a lot. I really appreciate that, buddy. But yeah, looking forward to this, man. I'm really glad we could pull this together. It's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to say, just like the listeners, I'm equally a fan. I'm amazed that you're playing a lot of times. Just an incredible player. So I'm interested in learning more about you and what makes you tick as a guitarist. And, you know, so if you don't mind, I'd really like to know, because I don't know, I'd like to know what it was that, you know, led you down the path of wanting to be a guitar player.
Man, it was the grace of God, brother, because I was 2.5 years old and born with an eye disease called nystagmus, where I have 2 of the 3 types of it. Mm. And everyone asked my, you know, my dad, growing up, my dad was an athlete, a motocross racer. He lifted weights, you know, great dad. But I'm sure he was looking at me going, well, what is this kid going to do? He can't see, you know. And so his sister come bringing him his father's 1938 J35 Gibson. And because my grandfather, who I was named after, played guitar in the 30s. And but that old guitar, you know, was real sentimental to dad. So it sat in his bedroom. But I guess I grabbed that thing, man, and just drug it around like Linus with a security blanket. You know, I loved it. And he would tune it to an open E chord. And I learned to kind of play like Jeff Healey, man, with it flat on my lap and use my thumb to walk the bass line and, you know, 5th fret for the 4 chord and 7th fret for the 5 chord, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But I really, really had a strong love for Elvis and old country music back then.
Yeah.
And, but man, by the age of 4, I was already in talent shows singing Willie Nelson tunes and Merle Haggard and Elvis tunes. And so, I mean, it was really early on. And then by age 7, I did my first TV show. And by 10, we won Talent America, man. So it was like, boom. I mean, just as a kid, it just took off like crazy. But I really got started in bluegrass because up in Maine, man, that was the most popular style of country music. There were a lot of bluegrass festivals around. And as, you know, kids, my brother and sister and I, when they saw how much money I was making, they wanted in. And so we had a little band called the 3J's, man, but we traveled all over, you know, up into Canada and down through the Northeast and traveled pretty much every weekend, man, and joined the Down East Country Music Association and won a bunch of awards through them. And you know, so, but really the pivotal point for me though, man, was my dad took me to see Ricky Skaggs when I was 10 years old at the Bangor Auditorium. Mm. And when I saw Ricky slinging that purple Glazer telly, man, I told dad, I said, the acoustic's got to go in the closet. I need an electric guitar. And so that's what spawned it all, man. And then by age 12, funny story, man, my dad took me to Northern Kingdom Music in Bangor, which was about a 2-hour ride from our house. And they had no American Telecasters in stock. So my dad instantly starts looking at Strats. And I was like, no, that's not where Ricky plays. You know, I want where Ricky Skaggs plays. And, but then when I found out that Hendrix and Clapton and Jeff Healey, who I was a huge fan of, all played Strats, I was like, well, I guess this will work, you know?
Yeah.
But I started playing in my first country band as a lead guitar player at age 12, man. And did that all through my teen years and all through my phase of learning Van Halen licks and Stevie Ray Vaughan and, you know, Frank Gambale and Steve Vai and Satriani and, but still loving old traditional country music too. Yeah. So, you know, it was a kind of a hodgepodge of what I loved. But at that age, man, in my latter teen years, I thought, well, I'd love to become a session guitar player, you know. And So it was important for me to learn every genre I could, you know, and to be able to match tones and you know, things like that. So that was really what my first idea of what I wanted to do was to be a session guy. And left college after 3 years of the University of Southern Maine and moved to Nashville, man. And the rest is history.
Haven't looked back. I find it fascinating, you know, when somebody starts off at such a young age, you know, and begins to have success to some degree at such a young age, because, you know, I didn't start playing guitar until I was 26. And I know how difficult it is, you know, especially when you're young. Look at, I tried to take guitar lessons when I was young. I tried, you know, because I mean, who didn't want to be Eddie Van Halen or Ted Nugent,
sure,
or one, yeah, of those guys, you know? And but I just never had the fortitude or the willfulness or whatever you want to call it, to the due diligence to put in the time and the effort. And so, you know, that says a lot about you, you know, to say from an early age, all these different accomplishments, all these different things that you're doing, because we both know how much hard work that takes and how much time, you know, that consumes a person in order to learn all that and become that and develop yourself.
Yes, sir. I really do believe, honestly, that, like I said, it was all by the grace of God, man. Cause in school I was a, you know, teacher's pet, four eyes, made fun of all the time. You know, I was the chubby kid, you know, that couldn't see anything. And, you know, even in my teen years, I wasn't out, you know, learning to drive and chase the tail and that stuff, man. I was but I literally learned to play, you know, by the age of 10, when we entered Talent America, man, I was already playing guitar, banjo, mandolin, and fiddle in my show at that point. Wow. And my dad had it in his head that, well, man, maybe you should go to college and be a high school band teacher, or, you know, an elementary school teacher, and then you could just play in a band during the summers. Well, little did dad know, I had Nashville on my brain since I was 7, and I knew I wanted to go there. You know, I wanted to really be a part of where it all began. You know, I wanted to add my flavor to whatever Nashville had to offer me. But yet still, even when I moved there, I still didn't have a clue. I was like, man, anything and everything guitar I can get my hands on, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And you know, then I started playing with, after a few years of being on Lower Broadway in Nashville, I started playing with Don Kelly when Red got the Merle Haggard gig. And so I started playing with Don Kelly, which really, I owe Don so much, man, because he, you know, Don had the greatest lineage of guitar players in Nashville for years. I mean, from Brent Mason to, you know, Rod Riley, Kenny Vaughn, Troy Lancaster, Red Vocart, you know, myself, and Guthrie Trapp, and J.D. Simo. I mean, it was just, the list of guitar players he had was just enormous and amazing. Every one of them, you know, went on to pursue bigger careers in guitar. So to play with Don was really, really killer, man. And it was from his gig when Gary Chapman walked in and offered me a spot on TNN's Primetime Country, which was obviously a national TV show. But of course I told Gary, I said, but I'm just a guitar player. I don't even have a record deal. I don't have a record out. I'm not really a quote artist. I'm in Nashville playing side guitar. And he said, yeah, but I just heard you sing That's All Right, Mama, Brother. And he said, and you ripped it on the guitar. He said, I'll tell you what, man, I'm doing a show at the Ryman Auditorium Sunday night, and it's called Sam's Place, Music for the Spirit. You know, Michael W. Smith and Points of Grace and a lot of gospel acts will be there. He said, man, come over and play the Ryman. And I'm like, now, granted, it wasn't the Grand Ole Opry, but yet still the Ryman is the mother church of country music. So,
right.
So man, I go over there, and first thing that I did, man, was walk out on stage and drop my pick and went, oh, shit. And the whole place, I didn't realize how live that stage was, man. So even if you talk normal, people in the balcony can hear you. And so everybody got cracked up on that. And then I did That's All Right, Mama. But, man, I got a huge standing O that night.
Yeah.
At the Ryman Auditorium. And then, of course, that led to a great story for me to share for Gary and I to talk about on primetime the next week. And from that performance, I actually got my first invitation to play as a headline artist at the Grand Ole Opry. So, And then after that, it was like, okay, I guess I am going to be a guitar artist, because how do you get these enormous opportunities and do them all if you're really not interested in an artistry, you know, or an artist career? Right. And so then I met my first manager, and then next thing I know, I'm signed to Steve Vai's label and worked with Favored Nations, and then went on to Shrapnel Records with Mike Varney, and then pretty much been an independent artist since then. But gosh, man, I've had 8 albums out now and all kinds of signature pedals and gear and a new Johnny Hyland Kiesel guitar. And so, I mean, every dream I've ever had, brother, has already come true. And so I'm like I said, I've lived a real blessed life of being able to live a dream every day.
Right. Well, your career is definitely fascinating, but it's also a little bit, it's a hodgepodge. It's eclectic. In other words, you know, here's a cat playing on the Grand Ole Opry, right? Mm-hmm. Playing fiddle and banjo in his show, signing to Favored Nations.
Yeah. Which,
you know, and then to go to Mike Varney, which I know Mike, you know, I know Mike, and I know it's all about, he loves the guitar, period.
Yeah, he does. That's
his thing right there in that. But it's really cool. So I want to know, Johnny, what are some of the things that you think that you did in the years that you were developing yourself that have helped you become the player that you are right now?
Well, I have to give total credit to Steve, man, because Steve Vai was the first guy to not only inspire me to write. And even before the Vai thing happened, Joe Glazier called me one day, who obviously works on everybody's guitars around the world. And he said, hey, man, my buddy Louis Shelton is doing a Nashville guitars record. Would you like to take part in that? I said, oh, my gosh, yeah. So I had written my first instrumental and played on the Nashville guitars album that Louis Shelton produced. And, you know, Louis was in, you know, he played on Last Train to Clarksville and, you know, had a huge guitar career, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, playing on that record with Jimmy Olander and Ray Flack and a lot of my heroes, you know, I guess you could say that kind of spawned my inspiration to write instrumental guitar. But then when I had Steve Vai's ear, man, it exploded, because Steve really was so gracious in saying, hey, kid, great tune, man, but let's, you know, develop that melody more. And really what was great in that area of my career in development was, I think Steve really wanted me to have commercial success, not just put out your typical Wheedly Wheedly guitar album, right?
Right.
And so he was like, look, bro, focus on the melody first, man. Really get a melody in your songs that stick in people's heads and they whistle it and they can hum it all the time, whether they're listening to the album or not. And he said, you know, but less soloing, more melody.
Yeah.
And I was, so as I was writing, I remember when I actually finished a song I wrote called Until We Meet Again. And Steve actually was like, yes, that's it. That's what I want right there. That's perfect. And so, and he, you know, it was funny because when he called me that day, he was actually humming that, you know, dun, 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 he was singing. And so, but that's really what shaped me as the guitar player I am now, because even as a country guitar player, man, I mean, if you listen back to the classic country stuff, you know, Don Rich playing with Buck Owens, you know, Roy Nichols with Merle Haggard, and you know, the melody always has been the most important thing in any song.
Yeah.
But yet with country guitar, you're really able to open that melody up and really enhance it and play around it. And, you know, so you always use the melody as the driving force of your solo. And then you kind of put licks around the holes of that melody. But you always want to keep the melody the main focal point that people hear. You don't want to play a solo that's going to, you know, take the audience's mind away from what song they're hearing. And so in learning that from Steve in writing my own instrumental music, it really stuck with me. And it was like, man, now here is a guitar hero of mine who obviously is, you know, one of the kings of rock guitar. And he's telling me, son, melody, 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 melody. But I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but when I hear a Steve Vai record, I hear, you know, just flying. And I think he really was pushing that, you know, hey, bud, be more commercial than me. Be played on radio more than me. And Granted, man, one thing Steve said to me was, son, pick a lane and drive. If you're going to be a country guy, be a country guy. But don't play blues and don't play rock and don't play swing and this. But, dude, I couldn't help it. That was the only thing Steve gave me for advice that I just could not do. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's because I just love so many genres of music that I just couldn't give any of the others up.
Yeah.
Well, that's even though I became known as a chicken picker, I still loved all the rest and still wanted to play all the rest, you know?
Yeah. Well, I can say from my own perspective, you know, on the outside, looking in at you, you know, I don't see a country player. I mean, you can play country. What I see is I just see an extremely talented guitarist, an instrumentalist, you know, when it comes to.
Well, I thank you for that, brother. Because, I mean, that's really what you really want as a guitar artist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But becoming that kind of an artist is really difficult. You know, he's right when he says for the most part, you know, he's right when he says stay in a lane.
Yeah.
And he was definitely great advice to tell you to focus on medley, because let's face it, how many guitar players make the mistake of playing the guitar and not playing the song?
Exactly, man. And that's the thing. You can become such a technical guitar player that you literally just sound robotic.
Yeah.
And if you lose the total emphasis of the melody, well, then it's just wheedly wheedly. It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve made a good point. And of course, I share this with all of my students to this day is if you don't have a great melody to stem a solo from, then there's no sense of soloing, period.
Right.
Because there's really nothing for you to grab onto.
Right. But if you take that solo and that solo becomes, you know, I mean, it's automatically a part of a song, but I think you'll understand when I say when it really becomes a part of a song. Like think of it this way. Look at Neil Sean.
Oh, yeah, man.
Neil Sean is one of the best players in the world at playing for the song.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, everything that he does in the solo is an extension of the song. It's making the song better. It's not a solo in the song.
One of my favorite Neil solos is Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah, there you go.
Good gracious, brother. He just hammered that melody, brother, and he had that signature lick. Yeah. That he kept playing over and over again, you know, but that's what I'm saying, man. I think it was guys like Neil who, even after Vi told me that, I could still, now granted, in my head, I was thinking, well, Neil Sean plays for a huge rock band, man, and they've got an actual singer, songs, you know, so I kind of put Neil like Eddie Van Halen in their own echelon because, you know, they were, you know, huge rock bands. Like, for an example, Kirk Hammett with Metallica or,
right,
you know, Alex Lifeson with Rush. It's like, okay, there's a singer and there are songs and they're specific melodies that the solos can form around and stuff like that. But then again, man, you really can't, you can't differentiate that really. A song is a song.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn that. And I'm still learning that to this day. I mean, it's even as I grow now as a player, I mean, it's always finding that melody that's going to just stick to you, man, like mashed potatoes, man, stick to you, you know? It's like you, and that's really what I'm trying to always do in my own playing, man, is always have that melody out there first, and then whatever goes around it, it's going to fit like a glove naturally, because it's just there, you know? But mm-hmm. that melody never leaves you, and like I said, Steve Vai was just you know, I'm so grateful to him, man, for being that open with me and sharing those, you know, real important factors in becoming an artist, man. And I'll always be grateful to him for that.
Yeah. Well, he's a sweetheart of a guy. You know, he's just a really nice guy. And, you know, I don't know him, you know, intimately or anything, you know, personally like that, but I've interviewed him several times and I've been around him and I just, you know, he's a genuinely nice guy.
He really is.
And he's an amazing, amazing player. I mean, you know, we might look at some of his songs and go, yeah, he's just killing it. He's just shredding and doing whatever. But there are a lot of his songs that have those elements of melody that, you know, that he was sharing with you, you know,
it's absolutely, like,
you know, because I think that's what makes, you know, him and Eric Johnson and Joe Satriani, you know,
especially in Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. In the instrumental, you know, rock instrumental kind of world. That's what makes those guys stand out from everybody else, because everybody else is just shredding and playing.
Sure. Yeah.
But these guys are, you know, they're creating some really magical melodies and,
My goodness. Yeah. Well,
song has purpose.
Yeah. And you know, the first time Steve let me come out and jam with G3, man, and at the Ryman again, it was Yngwie and Steve and Joe and Neil Sean came out that night and played as well. Wow. And Neil and I became buddies, man. But the funny thing was, you're right, man. I mean, when you're on the stage with those guys, the first thing you see is not only expertise in how they play and how their identity shines, because as a guitar player, that's the biggest thing. You want to have your own unique sound, your own, you know, identity and approach. And all of those guitar players have that.
Yeah.
So I was kind of that kid just standing there in awe, because I'm on stage with my heroes. And let's face it, man, as a blind guy, if I go to a show, I can't see them.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty much there listening to the show, but I can't see them well. So yeah, to actually be on stage and, you know, and I told Steve, I said, man, you're going to have to holler at me when my solo comes, brother, or touch me or something, because I don't want to miss it and look like an idiot, you know? And he literally did, man. He'd walk over and just put his hand on my shoulder. Okay, buddy, 3, 2, 1, you're in, go. But what I'm getting at, man, is they are all just the sweetest people in the world. And yeah, to find out that your heroes are, you know, they put their britches on the same way you do, you know, yeah, and they're genuine, genuine people. And dude, even the first time I did G3, I was standing in the hallway with Joe and he said, man, Steve tells me that I'm one of your heroes. He's like, I don't get it. And I just looked at him and I said, well, you know, okay, sure, man. I've got a T-style guitar on and I play Merle Haggard tunes and stuff in Nashville. But I said, Joe, man, it's the way you write, brother. It's the way you put songs together. It's the way you phrase. It's the, you know, and it's like, man, I felt like I could have just gone on and on and on and on just bragging on him. But at the same time, man, we you know, all guitar players for the most part, man, who have a name are all just good, humble people, man. And we're all still growing too, you know? So even when I teach students nowadays, man, I'm like, sometimes if I hear a lick they play, I'll go, hey, I want that one, man. You teach me that one. You know? It's like Chet Atkins said, man, you got to steal from everybody, man. We're all just thieves.
Right. Right. Well, there's only so many notes, you know?
That's right.
You know, and so many, yeah. So, yeah, I've always admired country players. That's not my thing, and it's, you know, and it's definitely not because I don't like it. It's because when I look at country players, you know, and I shouldn't say this like this, but I'm going to. When I look at country players, I just think these are the most badass guitar players in the world. I mean, Steve Vai's great, Satriani's great, but when I put him next to Brent Mason, I don't know. And it's like, you know, it's like, you look at, where did John 5 get all his inspiration and licks in history from? Hee-haw.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, those players that you've been talking about are the players that made him who he is as well.
Sure.
But that type of playing is scary to me. I mean, I don't understand it. It's another world. It's another way of thinking. You know, it's like learning another language.
Actually, what I tell people, man, about country guitar is you have nothing to hide behind.
Yeah.
You know, a rock player can crank up the gain on his distortion pedal or on his amp and really just, you know, just shred like crazy. But with country guitar, you're virtually plugged in to a, you know, a T-style guitar through a, you know, a Fender amp, a 212 combo or something. And you might have a compressor and a delay maybe, and a, you know, but there's not much for you to hide behind. That means if you clunk a note, brother, everybody's going to know it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, you know, just the whole, you know, hybrid picking and, you know, and the chicken picking stuff and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that stuff's fascinating to me. I've always wanted to learn to do it, but you know, it's like, I think I just got too much on my plate to learn that stuff. But it's intimidating. that's a good word. It's intimidating as a player, you know, to look at that stuff. Are you familiar with Brian Posehn?
No, I'm not. Uh-uh.
Oh man, I'll have to send you. He's in some band, I think in Texas, country band, mm-hmm. you know, and it's old school, old
school. Oh, see, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a picker, man. He is a friggin' picker and just blew me away. I was like, never heard of him or anything. He's not in a big band or anything. But right. I had him on my show because he's such an amazing guitar player, like a lot of country players are in that.
So. Man, that's so awesome, brother. You know, it's funny, man. My wife and I moved away from Nashville in 2018. And it was literally because traditional country guitar is kind of going to the wayside.
Yeah.
Modern day country is kind of 70s rock, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember doing my last session in town with a Les Paul, a half stack, and a looper pedal. And I just went, time done, man, you know? So, I mean, it's change is inevitable, but yet, man, I never thought I would say that Nashville was really losing its roots. And, you know, I understand music changes, it evolves, and everyone's like, oh, just wait a few years, it'll come back around. But no, brother, it wasn't coming back around.
Yeah.
And I really felt in my 22 years in Nashville, man, that, you know, when George, like, even when the first year I moved there, you know, Mr. Bill died, Bill Monroe passed away. And then it was like Carl Perkins and Roy Clark. And then when George Jones passed and then Merle Haggard passed, and then it was like, all of a sudden, all the icons were, you know, I mean, they were getting old, let's face it. And so I really had a hard time as a Nashville country player and really, really loving traditional country. I mean, dude, when I moved there in 96, if you didn't walk in there in boots and a hat, dressed to the nines, and you get up there and pick your butt off, but it wasn't on top 40 country. It was Ray Price and Webb Pierce and, you know, a lot of classic country stuff that you really have to be a fan to know that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, man, it's kids in buckle jeans and Affliction t-shirts with a Les Paul and a beanie on with a Kemper amp and idiots, you know, and it's like, oh, come on. You know, so I finally just said, look, man, if Nashville's going to go through this, and let's face it, all the LA producers and like Billy Sheehan and Robin Ford and, you know, Mark Slaughter, all these huge names in the rock world and blues world and stuff are moving to Nashville. And
yeah,
not saying that they shouldn't, it's Music City USA, but I guess now that that's happening, man, the traditional side of country music is slowly, you know, declining, and yeah. It hurt my heart so bad. I just had to get out, man.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, guys like me feel the same way when it comes to rock music,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, I'm a child of the late 60s and 70s, you know, yep. In the early 80s for rock, when, you know, all the bands like Hendrix and Zeppelin and Clapton and, you know, Cream and absolutely. All those kinds of bands were the staple. And then all of a sudden you go through the whole, no disrespect intended here, you go through the whole hair thing and then you're into grunge, which lost me completely. You know, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I kept scratching my head going, there's no guitar in this.
Right, right.
I couldn't stand it. And now where are we? You know, it's like, okay, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, you know, Taylor Swift. I mean, I get it, but what happened to that rock? It's not,
yeah, man.
It's not there no more. Just like your country's not there no more, you know, it's
right
today.
Right. And I guess, you know, really, man, it was like, some people are like, oh man, did you just run out of Nashville with your tail tucked between your legs and just boohoo me? I'm, you know, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I left there realizing I could be Johnny Hyland from anywhere, but I'm always going to do my best to do two things. One, to keep Chicken Picking alive, and two, to keep Danny Gatton's legacy alive, because Danny's my biggest guitar hero, man. I love right. him. And yeah. here again, Danny Gatton's name's not mentioned that much anymore, and that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Virtuosic guitar players, man. I mean, I remember in the early 2000s, man, people are saying, well, you know, the days of the guitar hero, guitar god thing is over, because now, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Tiger Woods and all these other, you know, Michael Jordan, all these other names. Now they're the biggies, and Guitar Heroes have kind of gone to the wayside.
Yeah.
But then again, man, it was all about, really for me, it was all about sharing the gift that God gave me in the first place. But number two, to inspire kids to put the video games down and to grab a guitar and play.
Yeah.
And that's why I teach so much nowadays, man. And I run a studio full time because, shit, man, I can't afford to take my band on the road right now, you know?
Right. But, well, who can?
Right. And but on top of that, I ended up really loving to teach. And yeah. So I've been teaching online. Well, I've been a teacher for 30 years, but now to meet some of these young kids, man, that have that actually own a Telecaster and go, Mr. Hyland, would you show me? And I'm like, well, you got to cut the Mr. Hyland shit, man, because I'm still Johnny. I mean, I'm getting white in the beard here, man, but it, you know.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy seeing now that there are a new younger generation that are really grabbing on to the Merle Haggards and Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash. And, you know, but then again, man, you remember in the 80s and the early 90s too. I mean, 91 was the big country music resurgence, if you will. But if you remember, man, even in the 80s, you know, everything was changing then. You know, you still had Ricky Skaggs and Vince Gill and guys like that and George Strait. But you still had your guys like Gary Morris and Kenny Rogers and guys that were doing the, you know, the love song circuit, I called it, you know, where it was, you know, it was just different.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that change is a bad thing. I'm just saying, man, you know, when Brad Paisley goes on WSM radio saying, man, they're trying to make me pull my guitar solos out of my own music.
Yeah.
That's sad, man. That's really, really sad because Brad's an awesome picker too, man. And,
oh yeah,
you know, you don't want to see a record label pull your own artistry away from you.
Right.
You know. So, but I'm just hoping, man, that traditional country guitar can still stay around. And so right now, man, I'm working on, you know, I've got 5 True Fire courses out, and I'm working on a new book with Guitar Vivo right now in the UK. And of course, my Johnny Hyland model with Kiesel is selling great. So real proud of that. Just so many great things still happening in my career. And thanks to my dear brother, Mr. Kenny Thurman, man, who was one of the best sound engineers in Nashville for years. He lives in Danville, Virginia, and I live in Chatham, but we partner studios together and do tracking for people all over the world. And of course, when I release a Johnny Hyland album, I'm playing every instrument on it. So,
yeah, wow. So,
it's just great, man. I'm loving life now, but honestly, man, I feel like I'm back to the, you know, to being like that little kid getting my first guitar all over again, because I'm getting to play for me.
Yeah.
Not, oh, you're stuck in the rabbit hole as a guitar artist. And okay, here comes little Johnny. Let's wind him up and send him out on stage and watch what he'll do.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's me going, hey man, I'm going to play today because I want to play, you know?
Yeah.
And man, what a difference that is, brother. It really is.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So loving life.
Well, you know, you've got a lot, as I said in the very beginning, you got a lot of fans. There's a lot of people that really like, you know, your playing. And I'm not just talking about, you know, people that listen to music. I'm talking about other musicians. I mean, there's a ton of other musicians that I know, professional people that all really like what you do.
Oh, man, I'm so grateful.
Pay attention to you and stuff like that. And, you know, and so, I mean, to me, that's the point where as a guitar player or a musician, you know, you can take a little pride in who you are and what you do when you have your peers.
Right.
Really, you know what I mean? Really looking up to you. You know, I think that's an amazing thing. And that says a lot about not just your playing, but it has to say a lot about you personally, because a lot of those people know you personally and they know what kind of person you are. And
well, you know, brother, I'm always that shit kicker that says, hey, I'm just an old hairy legged picker from Maine that got blessed, you know, because that's the truth, man. And, you know, even today, man, I mean, my lovely wife, Kimmy, we've been married 18 years and man, I wouldn't even know what to do without that woman for 5 seconds of my life.
Yeah.
And so I guess what I love doing, man, for all my peers and my friends around me in the business is Kimmy and I always have that evolving door, man, where I don't care if you're on the road or you just want to get off the bus for a night, come to Johnny and Kimmy, spend the night, record a tune, relax, eat, whatever, you know, because, man, that's what life's about, brother. We're all blessed to have musical talent, but to share it with the world is a dream come true. Yeah. And yeah, there's times, man, where you can have a lot of pride in yourself and have it go to your head. But I've never been that boy, man, because I always, you know, grew up with Skaggs singing, "Don't get above your raisin," right? So, I mean, I'm an old Maine boy and very proud of it, man, and of that fact. And you know, I've just always tried to hold true to my roots and just be a simple, fun-loving guy, man, that loves to share music with the world. And what a blessing that is.
Yeah. One of the people that has been adamant to me about, you know, having you on my show is Mike Moseret from Go-Go Pedals.
Oh, yeah, Mike Moseret. Yeah.
Moseret. I always pronounce his last name wrong. In that, yeah, he's a huge fan. And he was, have you had Johnny on yet?
Yeah, Brother Mike. I call him Brother Mike, man, because he is a brother to me. I love him to death, man. And Go-Go Tuners, man.
Great
tuner. You know, yeah, and you can see them. Even if I always tell people, even if the blind guy can see this tuner, you can too. So
yeah, that's what hooked me on him too, was I'm diabetic, and so my vision is blurry sometimes in certain lighting. And I could see that tuner. I didn't have to be right up on my board. I could be back from it or off to the side, and I could see it pretty clearly. So it makes it.
Well, you know, Mike has always been so great too, brother. Cause like for me, like the headstock tuner, for example, I can see the TC headstock tuner a little bit better. Now, why? I can't explain it. It's just my eyes. Right.
Right.
But I said, Mike, I got a Go-Go on the board and a TC on my headstock. So either way, brother, I'm covered. I'm going to be in tune, you know? And so, but he has been so gracious as a dear friend, man. And like I said, I call him Brother Mike because he is a brother, man. He really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was instrumental. He was the one that kind of got, you know, shoved me, you know, to just say, okay, all right, I'll reach out to him. You know,
it's like, yeah. Well, man, I'll text Brother Mike. Thank you, man. Such a good guy. And, you know, I think that's the other thing, man. I've been so blessed to have the best endorsers in the world. And,
yeah,
you know, I had a lot of flack online for jumping guitar companies and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot behind that. But obviously there's, you know, there's managerial issues. There's, you know, conflicts in the company and all. I mean, there's so many reasons that stuff like that happens that goes beyond what the average public knows.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, bud, I've realized over the years, man, it's the people that literally, man, I play Kiesel guitars and I love them. And their guitars speak for themselves. You know, Kiesel guitars are, I mean, they're just hotter than firecrackers, brother. And they're made to the finest quality and spec, you know, custom built American guitar for the best price, right? But it's really the people behind them, man, the Kiesel family, Jeff and his wife and his dad and everybody that, I mean, to me, man, it's the people behind the product, because most of the time the product speaks for itself.
Yeah.
But now I'm growing to realize, man, it's like Brother Mike with Go-Go, man. I love his tuners. Sure, they're great. But I love Brother Mike more, you know?
Right.
So I guess that's the stage where I'm at, man. And I guess it's because I'm pushing 50, you know, and I'm finally starting to realize, gosh, man, it isn't just about the gear. It's the people that bring us the gear, that that have the wherewithal to design something that's going to make our playing better.
Yeah.
And what a blessing that's been too. But everything for me nowadays, brother, is people. Good people. Good people need to know good people. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sure does make your life and your career so much better to work with, you know, amazing people. I know for myself, you know, like I've been with Andy Fuchs of Fuchs Amps for forever, you know, and so, you know, I've got relationships like that as well. And it goes beyond, you know, their instruments and stuff like that.
Sure.
I think it's my signature guitar is a Telecaster. I think the Telecaster is the desert island guitar for anybody. It really should be. It's really one of the best. I mean, I'm like anybody else. I have tons of other guitars, but the Telecaster, there's something about it that is just magic.
Well, now, Jimmy, if you ain't put a Johnny Hyland model in your hand, brother, you're going to have to one day.
Yeah.
You just need to come to the house and play one, brother.
Well, I've got relatives in Williamsburg, so I might.
Yeah, you're welcome to come to the house anytime, brother. But, you know, my Johnny model, man, essentially, This guitar is, what's so awesome about this, man, and it's really hard to see because I'm so close to the camera. Why? Because I can't see.
Right.
But yeah, man, this guitar, it just is so precious to me, man. And it's a T-style.
Yeah.
But I always had steak fries for fingers, man, so I could never reach the volume and tone knob on a standard T-style. So, yeah. You know, when we moved the volume and tone knob up with the switch down underneath, it just made total sense, man. And of course, this is one Jeff made me for my 45th birthday. It's kind of my tribute to Don Rich.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful silver sparkle. But yeah, man, you got to come to the house and play a Kiesel, brother. That'll change your mind. I mean, just not hating, just stating, brother. I mean.
Right, right. I know people that play Kiesel. I know that they make, you know, excellent instruments.
Yes, sir, they do.
You know, I don't doubt that one bit, you know. So I'll tell you what, Johnny, man, I could talk to you literally for hours because you're an easy guy to talk to, and I appreciate that.
Brother. I know we'll be longtime friends, man. I really appreciate you having me on today.
I hope so, man. You know, hopefully we can do some stuff together in the future in one fashion or another, because I really, I enjoy your work, but more so now meeting you, I can see why everybody has, you know, pointed me in your direction so many times.
Well, brother, I'm so grateful. And like I said, you're welcome to the house anytime. We'll record some together and get Miss Kimmy to cook for us. So you make it back to Virginia, brother. You come on by.
All right, Johnny. Thank you so much for your time, my friend. And
anytime, brother.
We'll shoot you an email and let you know when this is going to air, okay?
Fantastic. I sure do appreciate it, brother.
All right. You take care of yourself, and I'll see you later.
You do the same, buddy. God bless you.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.